Hey everyone, Jake and Gino here with some exciting news.
The Wheelbarrow Profits podcast is changing to the Jake and Gino Show.
You will still be able to find new episodes every Thursday on YouTube or your favorite podcast streaming service.
It's the same great show with the same great content.
And the same great hosts. You're not going to want to miss an episode.
So be sure to catch us on the next episode of the Jake and Gino Show.
Hello, everybody. This is Jake Senzino, host of the Jake and Gino podcast, with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, father, six, best-selling author, the G-Daddy. Gino Barber, Gino, how's it going?
Mr. Stenziano, what a week, huh? It's been two freaking weeks back-to-back grinding it out as entrepreneurs. And on today's show, I want to share a story with everybody and how I met this guest.
Dude, he's just jumping me right now. He's just jumping me. That's fine. All right.
Well, I am, because you know what? You can either make an excuse or you can make it happen. And
Gino's plowing the way.
We're at MM4, and it was Sunday afternoon, and John Jack comes out and says to Gino, I want you to meet somebody. And I could have said, you know, John, I'm an introvert. I don't want to talk to anybody right now. I'm tired. It's been a long 2 days. But when John Jack speaks, and by the way, John Jack, big love from the kids. The kids thought you were coming to St. Augustine. They're like, did John come over for dinner? John, you're invited. You got to come to St. Augustine. Anyway, John spoke and I said, you know what? I'd love to talk whoever you want to bring out to. And you know, our guest Julius comes out and it was an awesome conversation. And we were supposed to talk about multifamily, but we got into psychology. I got into speaking to somebody who was an elite person at what he did. He retired from that endeavor and he went and he started again in another one. And I was just, you know, talking about how he had the identity at one and switched off to another. It was such an amazing story. And when God opens the door, we're supposed to be there. We're supposed to be listening. God opened the door for me and I went through the door. And I'm just thankful that John came over and said, hey, I got somebody to meet. So when someone's there, go through the door. That's all I got, Jake.
Okay, so it's an ultimate teaser. Now I'm going to get down to business here. So I got you. I got you, man. All right, today's guest is an elite athlete, speaker, and researcher. He retired from the NFL after 7 years, including two Pro Bowl selections, to pursue his doctorate in clinical health psychology. Wow, we might unpack some things here. I got some issues myself, so maybe we'll get into that. Investigating the effects of contact sports on brain trauma. He has a passion for helping others create a greater quality of life, and we're excited to have him on the show. So without further ado, Julius Thomas, welcome to the show.
Thank you guys, Jake, Gino. I appreciate getting this opportunity, one, just to talk to you guys. Gino and I met at the conference. We had a great conversation there, so I'm looking to continue it. Let's have some fun.
Let's do it, man. It is our pleasure, and I want to hear a little bit, because so many of our folks go from engineer to investor, or you know, salesperson to investor. You're going from NFL to doctor to investor. So please discuss that transition first, from going from the NFL to what I'm going to call civilian life, because I know it's a different world out there when you're playing in the league. So let's hear about that a little bit.
Man, it's very different. And, you know, not to spend entire time recounting the steps of the journey that it took going from, you know, being an NFL athlete to entering a doctoral program and getting into investing. But, you know, there's sometimes I think, and I think that a lot of people can relate to this, you start to have this feeling deep down inside that you're supposed to be doing something else. And myself, like I'm sure many other people did, you don't want to believe it. You find all the ways you can to talk yourself out of it. For me, it was like, you can't give up millions of dollars. That's important. And then you start talking to people and they're like, no, you can't say no to this career. You got to play until you can play no more. You can't just walk away from something like that. But for me, I always felt that there was a calling on my life. And that calling was from a greater power that was going to always send me in the direction I was supposed to be going in. And I think that I had a moment where I felt like I wasn't able to be the person I wanted to be, to create my own vision and my own direction in life. And, you know, maybe it's time for me to do something else. And then something else really important happened. I started to not have as much pleasure reaching my own goals as I did in helping other people reach theirs. And that was like an epiphany, and in psychology, we call it an existential like crisis. It's like, what? I mean, since I was a little kid, I've been like, you know, I'm going to be first in my area. I want to get this trophy. I want to get this success. And you're doing that and you're winning and it's happening over and over. But then I had to have this compassion inside of, man, but how much better does it feel to help somebody else reach their goals and put stuff on their wall? Because when I'm 80 years old, I don't want to sit in a room full of my accomplishments. I want to sit in a room full of great people. I want to have that camaraderie, that closeness with relationships, because I helped people become who they want to be and become great in their own way.
But Julius, how did you let go of that identity? Because that's the question that's really hard. You know, you have the pharmaceutical rep on that side. You have the pizza guy on this side. Everyone know me as the pizza guy. And Jake still says the chef.
That was easy for me, man. I was, I had no issues with that.
But for me, it was hard because I had been doing it for 20 years. Everyone knew me as that. I was doing training videos at Gino's Family. For you, it's even one step further. You're, you know, successful on TV. Everyone expects you to continue. And then when you don't, what are you, nuts? You're giving away millions and what do you get? You going back to
college? Yeah, you get the haters coming out of the woodwork there too or no?
Yeah.
You know, it's not even just haters for me. It was people that were kind of in disbelief. You know, when you start telling your family and your friends, hey, you know, I'm thinking about retiring. Everyone is looking at you and they're thinking, what? Why? I mean, this is amazing. It's because what can happen is on the outside, people can determine what the experience is like on the inside. So they're like, you're an NFL athlete. You're like you said, Gino, I'm on TV. You're having great success with that. And so people are saying, you must be really happy. That must be really great. But for me on the inside, it felt like, you know, I'm not unhappy, but there's something else. Mm-hmm. This other path that's calling to me. And it's a hard experience to explain in words, but it's something that comes from the inside. And you ask yourself, am I going to trust it or not? I think, Gino, you said it. Am I going to open that door? Right. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, like, you know, God, he has that thing right there, but you got to take those steps. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was like, am I sure that I'm really ready to give this up? And it's very hard to go from being the best world at something. And I call it the mountaintop, the peak, and walking down into a valley and saying, hey, I'm here to learn something else. And that valley, though, is where you find out about who you are. That's where you see the kind of person you are. So it's been a very, very challenging experience. I can't tell people it was easy. It was comfortable. No, it's hard every day from being world class to student doing it other
people. Starting over again, right?
Yeah. So Julius, you think you had to express a tremendous amount of humility? I think humility is very important. I think that most of us, and you see the Instagram world right now where people are closing 300 unit deals and they're on there and there's no humility to it. That's part
of it. Laying across your Lambo, man, that's cool, right? Like there's humility in that, right?
You know, pictures in front of PJ, kid, all the Louis bags.
Yeah. So let me ask you, who are your role models at this point? Like, who are you looking up to and for guidance? Because maybe there's people out there. I had Jake as a role model. I had, you know, my wife as a role model. I had my parents as a role model. Who are you modeling? Who are you trying to, you know, work for?
Man, that's a great question. I started as another, I have these ideas and then I'm like, okay, I'm going to go live it out. But for me, I really realized that every person is a teacher. Every single person I interact with is better than me at something. They have some skill, some talent that they've been relying on their entire, and it's allowing them to be successful. So my real challenge, my goal is how do I identify what's making that person good? It could be a mom that's stay at home, but it's the way she treats people when they come into her home. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be like, you know, somebody that flies around the world and runs companies. It's every single person I meet has some talent. And I can increase my overall ability if I can start to emulate what makes them. So I'm always going through life looking and really trying to be aware of what's allowing somebody to be successful. How can I steal? I call it like copy and steal their strengths. And if you can
build R&D, baby,
rip off and duplicate.
That's right.
Yeah, but that's what
Gino calls a rip off and duplicate. Yeah.
It's like as an athlete, you see somebody do a move and you go, wow, that move's fire. Like, look how successful that was. And then there's no humility there. You go and you copy the move until now but when you can take that to everything you do in life, right? Like I can sit down here and be like, man, what did I really take in this interview? Man, he's got some special skills here. What were they? And then afterwards, I'm going to write them down. Then I'm going to ask myself, okay, I start creating that for myself. Can I start doing that in the way I interact with people in the endeavors that I undertake? And then you do that over time and you start to create this mastery process. And that's, I'm fascinated by it. My passion, that's what I want to do. That's what I want to bring to the world moving forward.
Do you mind if I share a quick story with you guys?
Your show, dude.
Similar about that. It's the Jake and Gino show. Jake is first, Gino second. So Gino has to ask Jake permission. But
I'm just here for the ride, big guy.
I think it's very relevant because I was speaking to my son who's 19 years old and talking about humility. And the other night we got into an argument and he's always worried about.
Did you really? I've never seen you guys even come close to anything like that.
No. Well,
like,
the problem
like a
is,
real argument or
yes,
like.
Yes. The argument where he's always worried about doing something wrong. And he's always thinking about God as the Old Testament and everything he does wrong. He's always worried about sinning. And I'm like, dude, you got to lighten up a little bit. And I just got fired up with him. And he's like, Dad, what's your responsibility? And I'm like, He's like, it's to get to heaven. It's to get me to heaven. I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to, it hit me to the core.
That's a tough volley right there.
And I'm like, what Julius is saying, I'm learning for my son who's 19 years old. And that, cause like, you can't take this all with you. I'm like, Mike, I'm not making this money for us. I'm making it for impact. And it's not the money that I'm chasing. It's the opportunity. And the more opportunity that I get, the more money I make. And what am I going to do? That's just how the world is. I mean, I'm not chasing money. I'm not doing this for flash. I got one house, two cars. And it was just really an eye-opening experience for me. So you can learn from anybody. You can even learn from your children. And that refined the way I speak to him. And I don't want to judge him, because every time he looks at something, he's always worried about doing something wrong. He's an amazing person. He's so much more talented than I am. And he already has his moral compass at 1/3 the age of me. And I'm like, you know what? That's my job, is to get him to heaven and to get me to heaven. And how do we do that? And that was a really, that was an amazing experience to me. So I just wanted to.
Dude, that was a little heavier than I was expecting today, dude. You're bringing it.
Well, I mean, no, it just it happened the other day. And like he's talking about, Julius is talking about copying habits. And let's go down that rabbit hole, because what other habits did you employ growing up and learning and becoming an elite athlete? And then obviously transitioning and going into another endeavor. I mean, I want to get into the psychology and the doctorate, how that path, but what other habits have you employed over the years?
Man, you know, two things that I tell everybody. If you want to have success in life, you're going to have to figure out commitment. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't care who the person is. I don't care if it's relationally. I don't care if it's educationally, in career, commitment. The people that find their way into success are the people that they have this belief, and then they go out and they repeat these steps over and over and over and over. Mm-hmm. And then once you've got this belief and then this repetition, now you really started to create this foundation, this ability for that whatever you want to happen. And then the next thing you need is discipline. You've got to be willing to make these sacrifices. You've got to be willing to bring this great effort over and over and over. And I think that those are the things that I'm able to identify now that I'm no longer playing football, because it's crazy. When you're doing something, it's really hard to take that third person perspective and watch it. Mm-hmm. But when you're done and you put it down, and now you can look back and go, well, what helped me be great as a football player? Well, number one, deciding that I think I can do it. And then saying, all right, well, I'm going to wake up every day and I'm going to do something that's going to help me get better towards that goal. And then as you get more into it, and as more and more time passes, the discipline gets better. Like, okay, it's not just showing up to practice anymore. Now it's, how do I have the best practice possible? And then once you pass that point, it's, okay, what areas do I need to grow in? Like that humility again, understanding that I had a coach, Gus Bradley, fantastic guy. He would always say, hey, you never got it. You never got it. Once you feel like you got it, you can't improve anymore. And that sticks with me all the time. And I remind myself, I never got it. There's always something I can learn from somebody, but I think
always changing too. And someone's always coming up after you too, right?
And man, Jake, this is what I always talk about. People, they say, I want to be great at something. I say, are you sure? It's an uncomfortable place. Because people think that, you know, you just, I use the mountain metaphor all the time, because we understand
it's easy though. I get it, right?
Yeah, but when you get to the top, it's like, oh, look at this real estate here. It's great. My view's great. It's amazing. And I tell people, no, but there's always somebody coming up that mountain that wants that spot. So you're fighting every day to stay on the top of that mountain. And that's what professional sports was to me. It's, there's always that guy that's younger, less injuries, faster, stronger. He wants that job. Like when I showed up as a rookie to Denver, I mean, Daniel Fields is a great guy, great mentor, but it's unfortunate because in my mind, I'm in the back of that meeting room thinking he's got to move. He's got to uproot his family because I want that job. And that is the pressure that comes with high performance. But you know, you got to be cut out for it.
Mm-hmm. You got to be ready to do battle, man.
I'm going to let Jake, ask the multifamily questions, because I'm not there yet. I got a couple more that I want to dive into here.
I mean, hey man, that's what I do. I'm good with it.
How did you get into your next career of going to, you know, doctor school? And how did you pick that?
Yeah. So, I told you that I had this feeling inside that I want to help other people reach their goals. Mm-hmm. I want to pour into other people. I'm just immensely grateful for what people have poured into me and what it's created in my life. So then you start to, as you play, you do anything long enough, you start to see things. And for me, when I was playing, I would start to see guys were really successful on the field, but these problems were piling up off the field. And everybody knows, everybody sees it coming, whether it's happening in their home, whether it's the way they're treating people, whether it's some areas that they can improve in that would go towards having good lifelong satisfied quality of life. And I would always say, somebody should help them. Man, somebody should help that guy. Somebody should. And then after a while, you catch yourself and you go, damn, I'm the one that notices. Maybe I'm the one that should do something about it. So you
retire. Do you have any explicit examples though? Because I'd love to, you know, not naming names or anything like that. Anything specifically that you can share to make it, you know, even that much more in our face? Yeah.
For sure. So it's like you have a great guy on the team, right? But we won't say the position, but
yeah,
phenomenal athlete. But you're sitting there and you're talking
about wide receivers right now. I'm just telling you, right?
And you're talking to a coach and the coach is like, man, that guy has it coming. You know, right now he's great. So everybody puts up with him, but you know, he's going to run into a wall. He's going to learn his lesson in life. You know, he's mistreating people around the building. He's disrespectful in the way he talks to people.
Treat the janitors with respect, guys. I mean, for F's sake, right? Like, dude, that's the one thing that's got to just piss you off when you see stuff like that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So like if somebody's cussing people out, trying to fight people, highly disrespectful, but they're successful, you know, keep them, you know, if they're doing a great job. And
they're not a good culture fit though.
Exactly. And instead of somebody going, wow, you know, what if we intervened? Yeah. What if we could sit there and really help this person to make these changes instead of saying, you know, we'll use you while you're adding value to this organization, but we can't wait till you retire and you're no longer, your skill set's no longer valuable.
Where's that coming from though? Is that the GM or is the coach? Like, who's allowing it? Because at some point they're saying, this guy is so good at what he does, we're going to turn a blind eye to this other stuff. And I just know internally within our organization, every time we do that, it bites us in the ass, right? Someone may be, oh, look, they're the best, most skills or whatever. Personally, as a business, because it is a business, right? Yep, yep. So we're like your time in Denver, who was the coach?
John Fox.
And then was it, you know, did you have experiences? And I don't want to get too crazy, you know, name it, but like, was he a guy that was not going to tolerate it? Or was it, you know, the GM above him saying, dude, you just got to figure this out?
You know, I'll speak very generally. So as not to, you know, put them.
Yeah, of course. I don't want to. And I don't know John Fox.
I'll tell you one thing I learned about sports.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's high school.
Yeah.
In high school, you got a guy that has behavioral problems.
Yeah.
And you keep him on the team because he makes shots.
Yeah.
In college, guys that have behavioral issues, emotional problems, this inability to regulate their emotions.
Yeah.
And you keep them because it's the team successful.
So no self-awareness.
Yeah. And where does it come from? You know, I think it comes from so many different people have a hand in it. You know, it could come from the fans and the pressure.
Comes from that first high school coach that didn't do something about it. And then it just got worse at every level up from there. Right.
And it comes from the desire to win.
Yeah. Right?
If the most important thing that we're going to judge an organization, whether it's high school, college, professional sports on, is their ability to win. That's the ultimate metric.
Sure.
And if that's the ultimate metric, no one wants to hear, hey, we had a really good team, but we let these guys go because they had character problems. So now we're we only won a third of our games, but we're good. We're good people. This is a good team.
Yeah.
But that's not the environment. So you start to move people that are really talented along. And I really wanted to help. And after I retired, it was actually crazy. I'll share with you guys. I told myself, I'm not going to leave my room until lunchtime every day. I just locked myself in the room because I felt like this is the first time in my life I'd had the opportunity just to explore, think about who I am, just contemplate. Through that, you know, I started to develop a purpose. And about 5 months into just saying, let my mind go, walk, read, do everything I can to just kind of take in life, because as an athlete, you're going through it with the blinders. And then I had a purpose, was to help people heal from their mental, physical, and emotional pain. And I didn't know what to do with that. It's like, bam, here is this epiphany. Here's a purpose. But I don't have that skill set. What do I do? And I had some interest in psychology because I knew that this was a discipline to help people to grow from the inside out. And I was fortunate enough to make some connections over at the local college. And I actually had a guy, he's my mentor now, sports psychologist, great guy. And he said, hey, if you would like, you can come sit in my doctorate level psychology classes. I'm retired. I have nothing else to do. So I would go sit. And then from just going to sit there and be in these classes, I started to think, well, maybe I can do it. And had another mentor really kind of push me and say, hey, you know, if this is something you're thinking about, I think you could really find success in it. And I was not prepared. I was not a psychology major in undergrad. I had 4 psychology credits in all of undergrad. So I had to do a year of undergraduate credits 8 months after retiring. I'm like fresh off of retirement from the NFL and I'm sitting in class.
Good for you, man. I don't see myself doing that after that point.
And it was what Gino said. It's having that humility. Yeah. Like, you know, you have millions in the bank, but I'm going to sit here with the notebook out in the front row of an undergrad class with 20-year-olds behind me thinking, what kind of weird shit is this? Like, you're a millionaire. Why are you here with us writing papers? And but it's because it was going to allow me to fulfill that purpose. And that's really what my focus has been on, is really helping people find creative ways to do it.
So here's the Oh, go ahead, Gino.
No, I was going to say before you, I want you to become a life coach as well, because I think life coaching is great. It's not just therapy. It's, you know, actually helping people out. That's what we sort of do at Jake and Gino. You want people to see the future. You want them to take a look at what's happened in the past, right? Because we have to heal, but let's not dwell on that. Most of us dwell on it. We had a bad mom or had a bad relationship or Jake really treated me bad yesterday. Okay, that's all great. Let's let that go. Let's
diagnose. I'm never treating you bad. All right, come on now.
Just making something up, bro. So come on, work with me here. I can't think of anything because I have a great, you know, we're playing with house money, as you know. But then let's think forward. Let's ask these empowering questions and let's look towards the future. Let's raise your level of energy. All of a sudden you're excited, you're energized, and let's see the future because we've all got the answers within us. So I think you should blend the psychology and the life coaching all together and you'd be a freaking rock star at it. So,
you know, man, that has been my goal. Like as I go through my doctoral program, I've been focused on building performance systems. Mm. How do you help a person reach their peak? And that's what I refer to it as, is this is this place of thriving. Mm-hmm. This is when your performance is on point mm-hmm. and your wellness is on point. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my studies, I'm wondering, how do you help a person be physically, mentally, and emotionally healthy? Mm-hmm. Because if the performance is great and they don't have great wellness, man, that's a train going 100 miles an hour with a wheel getting ready to come off. Mm-hmm. So understanding, okay, this is how we keep a person healthy. And this is how a person has great performance. And if I can get them both, if I can get a person to have great proficiency in those areas, now they can be at their peak. Mm-hmm. And that's where you get that world psychologist would use the term. Well, now you're self-actualized. Now you're feeling good inside and out. And you're building towards those things that bring you meaning and joy and purpose and fulfillment.
So Julius, one thing that you're exhibiting
Hold on. I got to give my pitch, you know. I'm sorry because I don't want to move on past this here because I got my pitch and I was leading up a second ago. And it's not necessarily a pitch, but here's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing the NFL Buddha, okay? And Julius, I'll give you – dude, you are such an easy guy to speak to. So like if I was struggling or going through something, you're just very – you have a very calm demeanor to you. It's just pleasant. And I'm seeing this, and you may be already there. I don't want to be like getting the cart before the horse, but, you know, Antonio Brown – couple years ago is freaking out, team can't deal with him, right? All this shit's going on, dude. 1-800 got Julius. He comes in, he brings the pain, and you get these guys back on track. I mean, is that the goal? Is that the end where this is going? Because that's where I see it. I feel like you're just teasing it at this point. Where are we at?
That's the purpose in the training. And it's hard to have to go through 6 years of training to get my stamp so that I'm able to do that.
Yeah.
But it's even for it could be the Antonio Browns of the world. Yeah. It could be the CEO of that company that, you know, has created a pretty poor culture.
Your thesis is going to be what happened in Tampa, right? With Tom and AB, right? And then we're going to write the paper on that. And then you're off to the races, right? Yeah.
How do you help people build from the inside out? How do you help them reach their point of peak, their thriving? And how can you make that happen? Not just for an individual basis, but I also want to work with groups. If I give one person my time, it's really hard to have a broad effect.
Yeah.
But when you start to be able to teach groups, work with groups to help them just kind of light that fire inside and just keep stoking that thing up. Just how do I throw wood on their fire so that they wake up every morning and they're like, hey, I'm willing and ready to take on life to become what's meaningful and matters to me or themselves.
I think the book Mindset encapsulates your life between the fixed mindset and the growth mindset. I don't know if you've ever read the book. It's by Carol Dweck. And you obviously exhibit the growth mindset because the growth mindset is we're willing to learn. Fixed mindset, you can be amazing like John McEnroe, but you're making excuses all the time. It's cold out, the ref, the sawdust, the noise. And that's great. Maybe that's what a lot of these athletes that you have, they're exhibiting a fixed mindset because they're used to being coddled and they're used to not making excuses. But if you can teach them that growth mindset where, you know what, you're great, but you're here to learn as well. You came in third place, let's work harder. Growth mindset is all about working harder and just figuring it out and not making those excuses and being able to take criticism and all the life. So that's a book. I think if you haven't read it, it's an amazing, but it's an easy book to read. But as I'm going through this, what's the difference between an elite athlete that sort of gives up after a couple of years and someone like a Michael Jordan who went to play baseball and everyone's criticizing him because he hit 250 with the Chicago White Sox. Hello, the guy won 3 rings, went to play the professional Major League Baseball, and they're calling him a failure. Are you guys kidding me? That's how they're judged. But he didn't care. He did what he wanted to do, and he went back and won 3 more rings. So, I mean, that's the amazing aspect of working with a fixed and a growth mindset. So,
and I would even take it a step further, and I would say that maybe if we look at it from a more nuanced perspective, people don't always have a fixed or a growth mindset. Some people have a fixed and a growth mindset.
Yes. Thank
you. Like, oh, here's these areas of my life I'm really successful. Now here's a growth mindset, but oh, I'm not good there. Now that's where they have a fixed mindset. And, and that's what I want to do. I want to help people take that growth mindset to everything. Like when I first walked into that psychology building, I did not think, wow, this is where I was supposed to be. I was training my whole life to be.
Were you questioning yourself at all or no? Were you like, dude, what am I doing right now?
I had anxiety. I had so much anxiety.
He went in and he ended up coming out with Prozac, you know.
It's crazy, bro. Well, it's like, I better learn one of these theories and I better master it now because I need it for myself. It was a hard thing to do to go into a doctoral program with students that put more into education and more focus than I had ever in my life. And it was also weird because I wasn't a master there. I was so comfortable, so used to being a master, so used to waking up everyone. I know exactly how I want to get better. I know I already have a lot of the discipline well understood. And going to a discipline where I knew nothing, that's an existential thing. I'm sure that's what you guys do when you see people that are trying to transition from what they were doing and over into real estate. And it's like, but transitioning with this feeling that I'm not used to, that I don't want. I want the feeling gone. I want to be able to do something new and be really good at it, but I don't want to feel uncomfortable along the way. And that's what I hope.
That math doesn't work.
It's impossible. That's not the way the brain works.
Yeah.
The brain is supposed to tell you novel, new thing. Hey, don't run ahead to, like, imagine what would happen to human beings for hundreds of thousands of years if we ran full speed into new things. We're supposed to slow, be cautious, check it out, because we need to survive. And that's what the nervous system is always trying to remind us to do. So you move into something new, it's going to come with that anxiety, but your willingness to experience it while you're getting better. Once people figure that out,
think about what we're going through right now, like probably all time high anxiety meds, prescriptions, and think of the rate of change that is going on because of tech in society right now. And if you're telling me there's not a correlation there, we're dealing with change like our ancestors have never seen. So I have to believe that's a component of what we're dealing with as a society right now. But, more options. But
what have we mastered? As humans, we mastered making it easy.
Yeah.
Like, why would I want to work? I want a tool. So, and that works really good if you don't want to do the dishes and you don't want to have to carry your clothes down to a body of water and rub them together and wash them. So we learn, like, no, these tools are really good and tech gives us this ability to create tools and use them. But then what do you do when you have something in here that's difficult? Hey, give me the tool. I want the medicine. I don't want to have to put the work in. I don't want to have to fix my thought patterns. I don't want to have to go through unpleasant emotions.
That's not immediate gratification. What the hell are you pitching to me on here, right? Like,
you want me to spend 20 hours myself from the inside out? I want to run down to Walgreens. I want to get a prescription and I want this thing to go away.
Yeah.
So both of you, you know what I did to overcome that? I just linked pain to my current situation being at the restaurant. I linked the pain. I linked the fact that I was letting my family down, that I wasn't being the role model. And you know, fear causes an action. I mean, when you have pain, when there's more pain than pleasure, the pleasure of doing nothing versus the pain of feeling like a loser and not accomplishing anything in life. And God gave me this amazing ability and being sinful from that, that'll get you off your butt. I mean, it's not really good. You don't want to continue on the path. That's catabolic energy. That's negative and draining over years. You're going to get sick. But hey, that got me off. They say the proverbial couch and got me motivated. So if that's what it takes, everybody, use that little twist in your mind. I mean, use whatever you need to do, that little leverage. And hey, being at the restaurant in the back of the dumpster, calling Jake at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, that's what it took because I didn't want to be there. So I linked that pain to taking the action next step. If that's what it takes, everybody, then do that.
The interesting thing about Julius' story, though, is you were in the pain mode. He forced the pain mode upon himself to get to the next level. I'll sign up for some of that. You know, like,
the total opposite. I love that. Jake, let's take a quick time out, and then we'll just go into the real estate if you'd like.
Sounds good. Quick time out, and we'll hear from our sponsor.
Are you looking for ways to improve your life?
Here at Jake and Gino, our mission is to empower students through financial education and the vehicle of multifamily investing.
Yes, Jake. We agree that a person with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
We've created our proprietary three-step framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right, that we teach to our community. This framework, along with education, our one-on-one mentorship, on-site boot camps, and the amazing community, has propelled our students to massive success.
We've all been there. We've had so many students that have been able to shift their mindset, overcome limiting beliefs, and set a clear path to achieve their goals. Whether you're currently fixing and flipping, wholesaling, or buying single-family rentals, and you know that multifamily investing is the right vehicle for you, I encourage you to visit jakeandgino.com/apply to schedule your complimentary consultation with our team. And I want to let you know this isn't a high-pressure sales call. It's really just a discovery call to get to know each other better and see if we're a good fit for working together. And if for any reason we're not a good fit, our team has tons of resources we will share with you to help you along your journey.
If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and schedule your call now.
All right, guys. So we're back, and this is sometimes a multifamily show here. So I want Julia, I want to hear where that multifamily spark came from. Was there a story? Was there like, hey, look, I see what this person's doing. I think this would be good for me and my family. What brought the multifamily bug on for you?
Yeah, no, I think with everything, there's always a story. And for me, it really started off with that intention of what can I do to help people that are in need, that are suffering. And I actually had an aunt, and she just retired. So she's full of this energy, and she's actually working at group homes. She has her master's in social work. And she started to learn about, you know, populations of people in our communities that are underserved. And she starts talking about veterans and how they don't have enough homes to give veterans that are in these programs. They're like on a wait list. That's terrible. These people go, they serve our country. They put themselves in harm's way and back. Now they don't have a place to live. All right. I'm interested in trying to figure out what we can do to meet that need. But what I didn't realize in the time was I didn't know anything about real estate. And if you're going to try to create housing for someone, you really got to be a student of that game and learn what it takes to be able to own property and to have people that live in those properties. So we kind of ran that thing down, and it was like not successful, couldn't figure out how to do it. And then my girlfriend actually, during COVID, she going through some stuff, like trying to figure out, you know, what is this next thing? And I'm like, hey, I've been kind of starting with this research into real estate. What about, you know, getting into real estate? So I finished summer classes, and I was like, I got 2 weeks before 2 weeks before the next semester starts. Like,
baby, go buy something quick. Go.
Get into something, right? So started with a triplex, and we were able to start working with local public housing authority programs. And that is its own experience. We had to learn a lot through that. But so you get the first triplex and get it up and going, then kind of went into a quad. And then from a quad last April to a 44 unit apartment complex this September. And I think that along the way, you, as you're a student and you keep learning, you keep seeing more and more possibilities, find some people that can teach you, show you things that they've done. That's essential to me, super important. So now it's like stoked my interest. And now I see the ability to be able to do so much for so many people through investing in real estate. And it's becoming one of my passions.
What about the confidence of doing those few, smaller deals first? Did that give you the confidence to say, okay, we got six units now, 40, it's bigger, it's kind of scary, it's intimidating, but we can do this. We see what this is, right? Did that help out?
I'm making it sound like it was all easy and, yeah. You know, it felt comfortable.
No, I know you're giving the high level. We get it.
It was so uncomfortable at first because I think especially being a person of color, we're not used to being owners. I can't look back into my life and be like, oh, that was my cousin and that was my uncle and they owned this. And it was like, what is ownership? It sounds big. It sounds scary. But for me, I had a lot.
Did it feel like a pie in the sky? Like, is this for me kind of thing?
It felt like risky. It felt very risky. Yeah. It's like, here I am going to make an investment in a property. I'm not even living there. What are all the problems that could happen? My financial advisor, which was a huge benefit for me, was able to help me understand how not to make a big risk on me financially. So taking me through the deal, okay, starting off with what's the property? How do we make sure that the money coming in is going to be greater than the money going out? And that's
he probably talked about like loan to value and making sure you're not over levered and things like that. Was that part of the conversation?
Man, I'm going to be authentic and I'm going to be honest with you guys. I actually did the first one all cash. I didn't understand.
Well, that's one way to insulate yourself.
I didn't understand leveraging money. Yeah. I didn't understand lending. And so I went in and I was like, all right, we're going to find this triplex. We like it. But then my first fear was, how are we going to get tenants? Who's going to live in it? Are you sure? What if the thing just sits there and it's not leased out? So that was like one of my biggest fears at first. And then working with public housing authority programs, there's like these long checklists. There's a lot of things you got to make sure you have. So then it's like, okay, fixing up this triplex and we get it going, we get it leased out. And then it's kind of like deep breath and you start to like yourself like, oh, that's really working, right? Mm-hmm. And okay, all right, let's do another one. And then we do the quad, but this time you could and you feel much more experienced, much more comfortable. You know what to look
50%
for.
50% LTV.
Nope. No, God, dude. Okay. And then, so then I'm like interested, right, in family real estate. So then I'm online and I'm reading this stuff. And I don't know what it is, but Google always wants to throw it in your face that somebody in a neighborhood near you just bought that 200 unit property for $86 million. I'm like,
dude, that stuff will eat you alive. You can't get caught up in that crap. You can't.
It piqued my interest because I wanted to know how they did it. How?
Gotcha.
I see the guy's pictures and it's like they got the building like transposed behind them. And I'm thinking, well, how do they do this? How did they get to that point? So then I start reading more and like I'm, of course, a researcher. So I'm researching and I'm learning. And I thought, oh, there's this concept, scaling. Like you can scale and scale actually reduces how much it's going to cost per door of your investment. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. Because here in the South Florida market, it seemed like every 3 months we were going to look at another property, the price per door is going up another 20,000. And I'm like, whoa, this thing's ballooning. It's happening quick. Scaling is a way to help us really control the price per door. And that's kind of how it was for me. It was an idea, go figure out all the problems that are in between where you're at now and that idea. And I have my property manager that we work with now, he refers to them as bottlenecks. He's like, you got to work through the bottlenecks. And once you work through the bottlenecks, you can really get flowing. So I spent most of this summer learning about leveraging, learning about third property management, or third party property management, how important that is, and really continuing to immerse myself more and more in real estate. And that's where the learning happens.
It's a game of constant inflection points as you scale, and you'll have these moments where you're like, oh, we got to figure it out. But then there's this whole nother level of expertise that you can get to. So it's a constant ladder of inflection points that you're going to go through. And I really appreciate the story that you were talking about of your idea of ownership and how is it? Is it really for me? Is it like a weird thing? Because that is so helpful to so many people because you were feeling it. I felt it early on. I grew up in a small town in Western New York and I didn't know anyone that owned a business. And that's what it always was to me. It was always a business. Like my parents owned their house, my grandparents owned their house, but most of them were like police officers or whatever. Like it just, you know, no one did a business. Right. Yep. And so for me, when we started getting into the only business owner that I ever knew was that guy down there with that nice Untuckit plaid shirt on. They're still not sponsoring us yet, but they should be. All right. For as much as we bring it up, because that's Gino's thing. But gang, if you're listening to this right now, so many of us are going through these stories in our head of what it is. And you just need to get started sometimes because it's taking that first step. And that's why I really recommend people starting with a smaller deal, smaller mistake, think big, start small. You get in the game and you realize, look, this guy puts a shoe on one pair or his shoe one at a time, pant leg one at a time, whatever the hell the old saying is. And you realize this stuff is not rocket science, but it's getting started and pushing through those limiting beliefs or those stories that we're telling ourselves. So very impactful. And I really appreciate you sharing that. Let's see here. A few more things before we wrap this up. Any major mistakes on those first few deals that you want to be like, hey, I went through this, should have done it differently. Maybe share a couple of those to help the folks out.
Yeah. I think that for me, I spent so much effort and I asked an innumerable amount of questions on the front end, try to make sure that no big things happened. But I think that some of the things that really shock me about owning properties is first went into it. I'm like, okay, here's this inspection process, right? So I pay this guy X amount of dollars. He's going to inspect this property. He's going to make sure the property's A-okay and it's ready to go. And then you get the property and you realize like, was this just like, oh, did he walk around with like a flashlight and say like, oh, there's these things that stood out, but what's behind those walls? what's under that roof, what's going on with that plumbing. Those were the things that happened. What's the history of that property? So when our first triplex, the things we had that was an issue was, where's the water going off the roof? And I didn't realize that the roof didn't have fully functioning gutter system. So,
and apparently your inspector did not either.
And I'm wondering, I'm like, what is the inspector doing? I'm like, how did he not tell me that all this water is pooling right here outside of this house? And then it's up into against the house. And now we've got all these different types of problems. And then it's like, okay, now we got to mitigate this. What do we do? How do we get the water further on? And you call the guy out and he's like, all right, well, we're going to fix the gutter system and we're going to dig a trench. And we got to dig this trench all the way to the street. And you're like, dang, that wasn't what I...
I'm glad I paid cash for this.
And then you just keep going. And then it's like, all right, well, now we found out that the plumbing is backed up. All the units are starting, the toilets are starting to flow. And you're like, what? Like, what'd the inspector do? And it's like, well, I mean, you didn't pay for him to line all the plumbing. And I'm like, dang. So what happens?
They didn't tell me that on day one. I didn't know that I needed to snake the plumbing lines. Like,
and then you talk to the plumber and he's like, yeah, there's just wads of just flush tampons and just clogging up all the. So you got to now talk to the tenants and it's like, okay, we got to talk to the tenants. This property is 30 years old. So I'm like, oh, wonder what else is in there. What else is being flushed? And then as you
don't want to know. Exactly. You
just keep finding, having these experiences that teach you, all right, I need to check this on the next deal. And each deal
systems,
you do,
every time gets better. Yes. Yeah.
It's just like anything else in life, right? It's the worst you ever have been is right now.
Yep.
A year you'll look back and go, man, I was pretty silly. I must've been fumbling around. Like, how was that? But that's all you knew. You're doing the best.
Document, document, document. So next time you got your checklist and you're going through and you're not missing this stuff, because we've been there. I mean, first deal we had septic fields failed within a couple months. So yeah, we got through it. No, but dude, that's where the learning happens, right?
Yep.
Do we buy deals with septic fields anymore? No, but it's been the best deal I've ever done because it got me the game and things still pays. So
exactly. And it's, you got to anticipate obstacles in any growth journey you take. And this is, I always try to help people, like, don't think about it as just as like real estate. Think about it as anything, no matter, you pick a direction you want to walk, there's something that's going to come up there and it's going to present a challenge. And you're going to overcome it. And as you do this over and over, you build this thing called confidence.
Toughness.
And once you get that confidence, then you start seeing more and more opportunities. And that's when, as Gino was saying, more energy comes, because that's the way the brain works. And like, I love teaching neuroscience. I know we don't have time to get into it now, but the whole neuroscience of motivation, it's the same for all of us. But it's just about navigating each one of our own minds and able to reach whatever it is that we're set out to do.
Mm-hmm. All right, a couple more here. We're going to wrap up. The league with these quarterbacks and these penalties, is it getting too soft specifically for the quarterbacks? I mean, it's getting like some of this stuff, man. I'm like, come on. Is this like two in touch? Should we do flag or what is it now?
I say it comes down to business. Owners, like any business owners, they realize that guy makes $50 million standing back there. So we're all going to get together and make a rule. Let's keep that guy standing up. Let's keep that guy throwing passes. Because they don't want $50
million. It's a business decision. That's a very good answer. That's a very good answer. Any books that you've read in the last few years that you want to share with the folks that made a positive impact on your life?
Oh, man, I'm constantly reading books. That's probably one of my biggest passions. Which ones would I say had a great impact on my life? I think they all do. Alchemist. Alchemist is one of my favorites. I really love that.
Gino just did a lesson on it a few weeks ago. It took me like 5 years to get him to read it. Yeah.
It's amazing. Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning, A Liberated Mind by Stephen Hayes. That acceptance and commitment therapy is my favorite way of psychologically looking at life. What other ones do I, it's usually all heavy science books now. Athlete by George Mumford. That was a great one. I've done some studying of mindfulness, and I think that that's really important. Tao Te Ching, it's one of the oldest books around about Taoism, but it's really about, you know, aligning yourself with, you know, kind of the natural order of things and having a good mindset. So I'd probably say that those are had really positive psychological effects on me.
Did you, I think it was A Trillion Dollar Coach. Was that one? Did you know you read that one? Do you read? I see that being you in your next in your next business venture here, helping folks out. So that might be that might be one for you. All right, Gino, take us home here, big doggy.
So Julius Thomas, two-time Pro Bowler, decides one day to retire for the disdain of all his friends and going, you're retired. Why?
You're in the league, man.
You're leaving millions of dollars on the table. And Julius, deep down inside, said, I have a different calling. I have another calling. I've been great at this. I'm getting a little bit bored of this right now. This is not my passion anymore. And he sees what his true passion is. I think, first of all, helping others. Second of all, leaving an impact. And third of all, going back to school and really learning the mind, learning neuroscience and learning psychology and really how to help others. I love the quote, success equals commitment. And then that equals discipline. I think everyone should write those three things down, because to be successful, you need to be committed and you need to have discipline. And for any of you out there making the excuse that, oh, well, you know, I've never done it before. Have you ever been an elite at anything? I mean, if you haven't, you have no excuse, because he's been elite at a lot of things in his life and he's gone back. He's had the humility, but he's also had the awareness of what he wants. And he's aware, and he's saying, I want this next thing. And I'm willing to be a learner of the game, of whatever game I'm playing, whether it's sports, whether it's business, whether it's psychology. And that's important. And I'll end with this, Jake. We can either make an excuse or we can make it happen. We have that choice. And I'm glad I didn't make the excuse not to go through that door and meet Julius that day, because it's had an impact on my life. And just hearing his story and hearing what he can do at such a young age. Can you imagine what the rest of us can do if we make that decision to be successful, to commit to it, and to have the discipline? I think we can all do it.
You know, I'll say this. He made Peyton Manning who he is. Right. I think we all know that, right? Hey, Julius, I need a quick Peyton story, because I'm in Knoxville, and in Knoxville, you have God, football, and Peyton. So you got to give me like a quick, your best Peyton story before you sign off.
And that's a good one. I gotta really think about what would be a good one. Oh, so here's sort of something about being coached, right? It's uncomfortable. It's a process that you kind of lean away from at first. But I tell people, the best thing that happened to me was to be 23 years old and Peyton Manning come to you and say, hey, you got a potential to be the starting football player, starting tight end on this football team. But it's about you and if you're going to step into that. And for me, that the way he pushed me every day, I sometimes you'll watch like one of your highlights and there's this clip and he comes up to me, he goes, Julius, hey, let me tell you something. You just did two good things in a row. You broke off that route and the way you ran that slant on that last play, those were great. Those were two good things. We've got to clean up some of these other things though. And I didn't realize it in the moment, but now I'm realizing and thinking, wow, look at that coaching that he was doing for me. He comes to me and says, hey, you did two good things. And these were the two good things they were. But when you have somebody like Peyton Manning telling you that what you did right there was really good, you can bank on that. And Peyton was just such a huge influence on my life. And he pushed me to be a better version of myself than I knew at that point in my life I could be. And he did that every single day. I'll give you a football story. So when Peyton would always tell me like on Thursday, hey man, I think we're gonna see this. This is gonna happen. He said, hey, we're playing the Oakland Raiders. I grew up a Raider fan. He said, I'm watching the safety and the safety does this thing every time. He says, I want you to run your route 2 yards further. I'm gonna look at you before the play. Be ready for this some point in the game. And I'm gonna give you a signal. You run that route 2 yards further and you turn around like the ball is coming. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to do it. You know, he's usually kind of right about these things.
Yeah.
So I run the route. He throws the post over the top, 60-yard touchdown. We're running down the field to go celebrate with one of those receiver guys you were talking about earlier. And he says, if I tell you it's Easter, don't go check the calendar. Just start fucking hiding eggs.
Oh, shit.
And I was like, damn. You gotta love playing with one of the greatest, somebody that was a student and a learner of the game of football, and what he did was such a high level because of the time and effort he put in.
Sounds like awesome. A lot of leadership going on there. So,
absolutely,
guys, a lot of fun. Julius, really, really appreciate your wisdom and just I'm telling you, you're the Buddha, man. I just, great guy to talk to. I love it. So, Gino, sure. Julius, thank you guys for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, everyone.